Welcome to Talk Cosmos, the show where Sue Rose Minahan and her panel of guests bring you leading-edge astrology conversations through a journey of soul growth patterns connecting astrology's energetic cycles. Get ready to understand your path in the cosmic roots of the stars.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining Talk Cosmos. Insightful conversations awaken your consciousness for soul growth. And I'm Sue Rose Minahan, the founder of Talk Cosmos and astrologer. And today is May 21st. The sun just went into Gemini today. So that's very exciting. We're at that cusp between Taurus and Gemini. And there's so many planets still in Taurus. The big one, of course, is Jupiter. Jupiter began its year's journey in Taurus as of the 19th, just a few days ago, until next year on, I believe, the 21st, 25th of May. So it's a whole year that we have this powerful, big energy. So today, our conversation with a special guest, it is the third week. So when you tune in, we have a special guest and we're repeating the same guest we had last time because he's so wonderful, Israel Ahosi. And I'll tell you all about him in a moment. He's from the UK. So we bridge a lot. The world is expansive and I'm so excited here to be in Hawaii across the waters, two oceans away, speaking to England. It's very exciting. So meaning that we began talking about Jupiter in Taurus last time on April 16th, which was the third week of the month. And now we're picking up on Venus, who rules in modern astrology because there's the esoteric too. And we're going to get into that today. Of Taurus. So this is exciting and thank you so much for tuning in and subscribe for the newsletters and to the YouTube. And of course, we're always on podcast because, oh, that's right. We don't have a recording. It's just me. Okay. Thank you, Nathan. Maybe you could get my slides up. Okay. So here we are and I'll just have that the official and Israel is the president of the Astrological Lodge of London, and that's his, and I'll show the bio in a moment, but you can find him at astrologe.com UK, and he has his own website, Sacred Planets, and Israel is the current president, as I had said, of the Astrological Lodge of London, the oldest, I think, lodge there is, started by Alan Leo. And he's a full-time practitioner and teacher of astrology, tarot, philosophical, and esoteric teachings. Studies with complete full honors in psychological astrology at the Center of Psychological Astrology in London with Liz Green. He's a dedicated student, teacher, astrology and tarot. And he combines many facets, the traditional, the medieval, psychological and Vedic techniques, providing guidance, answers, and consultations to students and clients worldwide. And if you want to contact him, email him at astrologyofthesoul@gmail.com. And many of his studies and practices include cosmology, mythology, occult sciences, Kabbalah, shamanism, and divination. Hello, Israel. Once again.
Yes, good to be here once again. Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. Always a pleasure to be here. It's almost like my second home. It's not my second home, but it's great to be here. I'm very thankful, very appreciative of you having me once again. So yeah.
Oh, yes, indeed. And how, just generally speaking, how is your spring over there in London?
Yeah, it's coming along okay. Today we had a bright day. It's been a little bit cloudy here and there in the last couple of days, but sure. It's been a few raindrops, but nothing too heavy. But it's not cold. It's certainly getting nice. Warmer. So yeah,
it does make a difference. Spring does speak up, and that's how I feel in Hawaii. I just come from Seattle, but this really focuses in on why, I noticed as I was researching this, the question, why do we have a planet named Venus? And it is after the goddess. And, you know, it's because all around the world, it's such a predominantly bright, in the sky.
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, this is the time, although the sun has just, you know, today just moved into Gemini, we have just finished the last month of Taurus, which is the sign ruled by Venus. And this is where, although the spring equinox or the vernal equinox, where we, you know, which is known as spring, we do start to see the buds and the plants starting to spring up from the ground. But it's actually during that Taurus month, we really start seeing those flowers, which are ruled by Venus as well, really start coming to, they start blossoming, they start coming to life. We really start seeing the beauty, of Venus really starting to take shape. They say Aries is the zodiac sign that brings the initial spark, that initial start. And it's actually the energy of Aries that, when the sun now moves into Taurus, now warms up the soil for Taurus, for her to be able to bring out her beauty in the best way. So, yeah.
I love hearing this. You tie together instantly so much of the mythology, because they're great lovers. They sit on either side of Earth. We have Venus and Mars, the interior and then the exterior. And they do create this beauty of flowers. And I remember in one of her lovers, a mortal, Adonis, if I'm saying it right, you know, when he died, she cried. And so the flower becomes the anemone, I think, of the red color, the flower of birth. But here, too, one of the factors, it's kind of tying back to Venus, which is so beautiful, and the name relates to desire and, you know, therefore attraction. But it said that in this particular one, the planet is covered with acid clouds, which we know, ironically. But I began thinking, here you were mentioning of England, as we are here in Hawaii, the clouds. Yes. And I thought, too, isn't it true that, especially when we think of, you know, spring coming from the earth, the death, and then which some of the older mythology brings up and the birth, that it's like unveiling the veil, like the clouds. You have to get down, or else the pain of love, you have to get through it to get to.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, no, most definitely. It really makes sense how symbolically and mythologically how the Venus placements or cycle or her signs really bring out and emanate that aspect of who she is, which is the beauty, the art, the things that correspond to our sensual being. And she is the also, let's not forget, the most the brightest of all the planets that we can see in the heavens as well. So I think that is also telling us something about who and what she is.
It is love. When you consider, they say nothing is without that love, which gets phrased as compassion or caring, but it's not just us, like the initiating spark of Aries, but it's that compassionate love that we need and all. And
she can be seen even presently. She can be seen in the evening sky as the as an evening star. After the sun has set, we can see her. Just after the sun has set, we can see her there in the heavens.
I think the next is great. Yeah, Venus star point will be in Leo, which I did not bring up in for this conversation, but that's when they're exactly together. It'll be in Leo, and she'll be retrograde. So she'll come up as a morning star.
That's right.
Think she's, setting. You know, we could go, here's another focus is why myth? Because I have many books on mythology. I dearly love it. And it is really a study. It's like, you know, the stories tell us one layer. But Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Hero's Journey, so many. Yes. So in that, Bill Moyer, who they had a great, you know,
dialogue.
Thank you. Yes. And he asked, why myth? And so I thought I'd repeat just to start off with people, like, because it is so important to astrology too.
Yes, definitely.
And he mentions, you know, this isn't something current in our society to think about this literature of the spirit, which I loved his bringing that out, but that it does bring up all our experiences that, and our soul experiences that we resonate. Yes. And this is what I love, that they're clues to the spiritual potential of human life.
Yeah, definitely. Myth is the attempt to, it serves on many different levels, and myth serves as a platform for us to be able, and as a record for our, for, you know, what is happening in our lives and in our surroundings. Mythology also is expressing the human psyche. It's a reflection of the human psyche in terms of what's going on, why we do the things that we do. Mythology is the story in a poetic way of human life and life experiences also as well. So mythology is extremely necessary. There is no civilization who do not have their myth, their cosmology, their mythology, stories. And although the stories may not necessarily be literally, quote unquote, factual or true, but they are archetypal truth.
Yes. And
they're speaking about archetypes. They're speaking about, we could say, energies, and about the human soul.
Consciousness,
the human soul, the human spirit in its journey. And myth is good because it puts it in a story form, because story form is much more poetic, and that's how we remember. We remember things. That's how the soul records things. It's how the human mind actually works. It's much more better to put it actually in a much more poetic, mythological way, because it registers deeper. It lasts.
Oh, I like this. Thank you. That's very well expressed, Israel. I appreciate it, because when I think of story, I realize that it has a motive, by able to like see these incremental plot points, you could say, one can consider, oh, boo-boo, you know, oh, that's a moral of it, or that's the lesson of it. And it's a way of telling us, the talking stick, that was the stories and the verbal ways of telling us. And, you know, sometimes I think people think it has a big, stories do have a beginning, middle, and end.
Yes,
they evolve. It's not just one interpretation.
Oh yeah, so many layers. And that's the thing with myth. Myths are timeless. They apply to any moment in time. They cannot age. They are forever, because they are speaking about that, you know, archetype, various archetypes which we are interacting with on everyday today experiences.
Yeah, you had mentioned so many things, and of course you were talking about psyche, is one of the large mythologies related somewhat to Venus.
Yes,
and which again and again gets supported with what a powerful part of our. I mean, it's not divided like sometimes we do here, but here, just thinking about the lineage, the expansion of the fact that the planet is seen throughout the world, like the moon and the sun, and there's so many stories. So going back in our heritage of Western worlds, which kind of morphs into the East too, but, and this is before Common Era, but Ishtar and Inanna. And I was interested that Of course, that goes back to Mesopotamia. And for those people that wonder, that was the area between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers in the Middle East, the cradle of civilization 5,500 years ago. But there was a Hittite empire that, and the Hurrians is new to me as I was researching, but very the same with Hittite. And anyway, these are old, but Ishtar meant often goddess, because they'll mention, so just like Venus later in Rome, Ishtar this, Ishtar that.
Right.
And you begin to realize, if I'm talking about water, I'm going to talk about different forms of water.
Exactly, exactly. Different aspects and different aspects of our being, different aspects of our manifestations is what they were alluring to and connecting with, so that we can understand that it's just like a human being. There are many facets of us. There's not just one. We function on many in the same field or in the same context, but we can function on many different levels. So it was the attempt. So we could be speaking about, let's say, for example, a football game or a baseball game, but there are many different facets or parts of that football game, or different people playing different positions. They're playing on the same team, perhaps, but there's different positions. So,
well put. Yes, that's right. It's all in reference. It's in, and it's a language that I think that's the beautiful thing. I'm so glad to have discovered this interest that you are so steeped with, because it's not like Campbell said, it's not something always frequent in our culture. So be able to discuss it. And for those that are interested, just a little bit of the more about the names here that you can Google. But Shashka, and there's many ways of saying that, was the name in Hittite or Hurrian, and very much associated with Inanna. Yeah. And of course, Inanna is part of that Gilgamesh, the first novel as it's put out, which is a whole study of itself. Mm-hmm.
And the story of her going into the underworld. And I'm wondering also if the gnome Shashka is maybe linked with the Hindu equivalent of Venus, which is Shukra. So I wonder, because I do know that there, there's a lot of cross cultures and, there's a lot of influence from the Mesopotamian region, ancient Persian region, and those regions of the Middle East that lent itself to India's building and civilization also as well, and vice versa. So and back then, philosophers and teachers and gurus would share information and exchange. So I'm wondering whether if there is maybe
that's interesting
language connection there in terms of where it's coming from. But
I totally resonate with that, because I too realize that as we go behind the timeline of today into the before, especially back to pre-recorded, when civilization was beginning or even prior to that, these ideas, especially we call it Middle East for a very good reason. It does bridge those terrains, and people traveled and the ideas communicated, and then they describe it in their fashion, just like anybody tells, about anything. I will have to check that. Oh, so here we have a little bit more about Shashka. There's so many ways of saying her. Was the highest goddess of that area, and I focused on her a little bit here just for briefly, because it because of this, she's associated with love and war, which Venus is, we don't think of Venus as Aphrodite is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the part of her either being the morning star or the evening star. Mm. So every time when Venus goes retrograde, and Venus goes retrograde for approximately 40 days, and this is where their connection with, in the Bible, they speak about reigning for 40 days and 40 nights, or Jesus fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. There seems to be some correlation there. During her retrograde, when she becomes a morning star, this is the time where the ancients were very observant, and they realized that every time Venus became a morning star, which means that she rises before the sun in the morning, that countries went to war. So that was the aspect of Venus that was warlike.
So, yes. And in fact, I have that here later, because we're working, folks, on a beautifully impromptu creative fashion. But the Mesopotamia also made such a... Well, we'll come back to that. Excellent.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
It's very true, though. They were like two distinct... Not different. I think the ancients must have known that they were the same, because you read different opinions, but they had different names for it, just like we do. We have different kinds of ice, sea, snow, or something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Depending on which facet or which side of Venus it is that they were talking about. So that's why.
Because love.
Yes.
Because I'm thinking, going back to Aries or Mars, Aries, A-R-E-S, folks, for the Greek form of it. But we think of it as war, but it's really that compelling energy to assert, which might get in the way of somebody else. But it's more of your own independent choice. Right. Whereas Venus is what we find attractive, because that's a survival technique, is the beauty, the flowers, the birds, everybody. Meaning that really, what am I trying to say here? That they're both. You can defend both. People can defend for love, or they can defend for their cause. And so, why we divorce that idea that Venus can't be anything but lollipops and roses?
Exactly. And as on some level, it's showing us that there is a duality, or there's two sides to everything in life. For love, there has to be pain as well. For happiness, there has to be joy that goes alongside with it. And just like what you said, because Venus essentially represents the choices, or the kind of, or the way we make or go about making choices. Venus is that ability. Venus actually represents the ability to be able to make choices. I like that, but I don't like that.
With the Libra side,
exactly. Yeah.
Very true.
We go into a shop or whatever, we want to buy some clothes. Oh, I like that jacket. Okay, that one's not to my taste. Well, that's your Venus at work. And same goes also for partners as well, whether it be male or female, but what we find attractive. But our ability to say, well, I find this person attractive, I'm attracted to this person,
but
I'm not so much attracted to this person. That is our Venus being exercised or going to work there in terms of what we find attractive. As they say, beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. So, based on where our Venus is placed, it's going to ignite the kind of people and things that we are attracted to, which we prefer. You know, Venus is our preference. What is our preference?
Yes. And again, the etymology later, there's one, because the word Venus, V-E-N-A-S, meant desire. And it symbolizes now, as we consider this evolution of it. Yeah. But I kept this slide up because also there are, whether it's the Mesopotamia and this, just as two indications, that there's the... And also with one of her children through Hermes, which is Mercury, like Psyche of the thought, that there is the masculine and the feminine.
Yes.
And it to me, it really emphasizes the unification of the foundational purpose. I don't know if purpose is the right word, but that this is an energy consciousness that's regardless of our physicality. It's just part and parcel. But it comes up quite a bit with quite of the older mythologies, because there's one where one of those more the older forms, and maybe it was this one, Saskia, had the power of making men into women or women into men.
Men, right.
So
yeah,
I thought that's really more of an embracive way of looking at the world.
And that's also her connection with Hermes, because Aphrodite and Hermes did have children. And that's where the word hermaphrodite comes from.
Yes, and I have
it. Which is actually a combination of hermaphrodite is Hermes and Aphroditus together.
Yeah, it's common to both. It just is. It's its own energy.
So it's that's both masculine and feminine, like what you're saying, or you know, that two sides of Venus. Yeah. So
yeah, we have a lot to learn that how associations here in Greek. Yeah. She was known as Aphrodite, and this is one of the. We don't have too many minutes here before our break, but one of the major mythologies considering her, and that was her father was Uranus, the sky god, who had been mating with Gaia, the earth goddess, creating life in every form.
Yeah.
But one of the children, Saturn, which they had several children, and Gaia plotted to stop that and castrated Uranus. And it's so interesting to me how coming from that was like his most noble deed of true essence, that this form of true desire, you know, without any of the ambiguity of morality, of judgment, but just pure desire for beauty and for as a positive force, creating this energy that would remain through and forming in the water. So that there's so many ways that it's interpreted, but generally through the semen or the foam of the with water, with emotion.
Yeah. You know,
Poseidon.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it's quite interesting that she came out of, or was born out of the waters, out of the ocean. Of Poseidon, so to speak, and she's exalted in Pisces, which is the water sign, which is the Poseidon. You know, Poseidon was the god, you know, of the oceans, of the waters.
Yes.
So it's no
of compassion.
Yes, exactly, and that's where she is also exalted. So we see the connections and the how she ties into. You know, whether it's the sign that she rules or where she's exalted, how again her energy is you know, being expressed. And I also I think it's quite interesting also as well, because in terms of in a sense, both Saturn and Saturn, who's Cronos, and Uranus are kind of both involved in bringing her about. It's Saturn castrating his father Uranus, and the blood from the castration spills into the water, and outside the form Aphrodite comes. So it's quite interesting how the relationship between
reminds me. Yeah, I'm just thinking, because as far as mythology goes, we could go on, and we have a break here coming up, but there was a Titans, and that was Saturn was part of the Titans.
That's right.
Then with when he castrated his father, you know, time, in other words, created time is what he did from this sky ever going onward action. And from that becomes love, or comes so many the sense of desire and what we think is beautiful. Sure. But with the Olympians, which he's the only remaining Titan, which have to do with his children, which is Jupiter and all the rest of them, or so many of them, is that with the Olympian gods, humanity, instead of having it decreed.
Right.
By the roles expected out of perfect order, Saturn represented, was more the will, the free will, that we make our choices, you know, through which you're saying with Venus, her other side of ruling both Libra and Taurus.
Exactly, what choices are we making?
Yeah, we have the consequences. We can grow.
Exactly.
The accountability comes here.
Yeah. Oh, most definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah, it's
which is
great.
Which is quite interesting because that kind of reminds me of the war of Troy.
Oh boy, we have a lot. We'll have to come back.
Come back, yeah, definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah, but yeah, we'll definitely talk about that.
Okay.
Choice has a lot to do with it.
It does. Oh my goodness, this is wonderful. Thank you, everybody. This is May 21st, beginning of Gemini, and I am with Israel Ahosi of the UK, London, Astrological Lodge of London president and astrologer of sacred planets. And I'm Sue Minahan. We'll be back with Talk Cosmos, all about Venus and more. Thanks. We'll see. While we take a break from this week's edition of Talk Cosmos, let's take a look at this cycle's archetype. We are currently in the period of Gemini. By leaving a cycle based on physical form, integrated through spirit, the energy of Gemini connects spirit with matter, focused on communicating and defining the external. Gemini is a mutable air sign signifying flexibility. Gemini dually focuses upon teaching and learning in order to synthesize the world one lives within.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga, we cover the world of animals. This week, May 28th, it's an encore presentation. Tune in to hear our last healing show with Dr. Nels and Linda Rasmussen. Together, they helped our listeners and their animal friends with emotional, behavioral, and physical issues. And if you tune in, you can receive a surrogate healing just by following along. Hope you can join us for Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Talk Cosmos brings you leading-edge astrological conversations with hour-long programs each week on KKNW. The show goes live every Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. Pacific. Talk Cosmos weekly programs are also available to watch live on Facebook and YouTube, along with daily chats throughout the week on the Talk Cosmos YouTube channel. While you're there, make sure you click like and subscribe buttons so you can get the full Talk Cosmos experience. Or, if you'd rather listen to the show archives with audio only, the entire podcast collection since 2018 is available on most podcast carriers. So, grab your coffee, tea, or kombucha and enjoy the show.
You found us. Maybe you've been guided to listen. Alternative Talk 1150.
Oh, that's great. Well, hello, everybody. We're back again, and this is May 21st. But before we go back to our talk about Venus, who rules Taurus, because Jupiter will be there for the next year, Israel, do you have something with your lodge or any lectures or classes that you're giving or something you would like to share with everybody?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, the lodge is, again, we have Monday evening lectures. We start at 7 p.m. UK time, GMT time. So that's continuous every week. We do break for the holiday periods. You can go on our website, www.astrologe.co.uk, to see the upcoming talks. For myself, I am starting an astrology course for beginners. For anyone who's interested, and I will be teaching both traditional Hellenistic, medieval, and modern contemporary astrology, and that will be starting on the 15th of June. So if anybody who's interested, you can also give me a shout astrologyofthesoul@gmail.com. That's astrology.
Oh, good.
.com.
So, oh, that sounds great.
So for upcoming.
Okay. And that's, of course, everybody can find it on Talk Cosmos. We have Israel's mention there. And I will mention, I don't know how this is going to pan out, but I was just contacted by a podcast in New York for a short interview, 5 minutes, about Talk Cosmos. And it's called the Interviewing Elite Podcasts. So that's very exciting. We'll see how that works.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Okay. Well, back now, we've talked about Troy. And also, I was thinking, we also talked about this family genealogy. And I was noticing my notes. So how we, because the three Olympian brothers that was divided after the new order, you might say,
yes,
was
yes.
Pluto for the underground,
yes,
Jupiter for the heavens, and Poseidon or yes. Neptune for Neptune. The oceans.
That's
and
correct.
So interestingly, all three of these really have a lot to do with Venus. Of course they would, because yeah. love, what else, and desire, yeah. what else do we have? But, well, let's see. I guess we won't get into that. Maybe we'll go to the next one and see, because we want to get to that Trojan War. Well,
yeah.
Here it is, because right there
yes.
in mythology, her son Aeneas,
yes.
I forget who she had Aeneas with, but he fled Troy after the yes. war, which is a very long war and yes. changed the world yes. and mythology.
Yes.
And Venus was very involved with that too, because...
Yes.
She kind of started that. We didn't get into that part
yeah,
of the story.
She did. And again, it's interesting because we've been talking about choices, which is where the whole Trojan War, actually, that's where the root of it started, where we had Aphrodite, we have Hera, and we have Artemis.
Vesta.
Artemis, who there was a beauty, somewhat of a beauty contest, and whoever was seen as the most fairest or the most beautiful was going to get the golden apple, and they asked Paris to judge the contest. As a matter of fact, it was Jupiter, Zeus, who was first asked to
yes,
who was the most beautiful, but he obviously was a bit too smart for that. He knew that I'm not going to get dragged between a war of these three ladies.
The goddesses, so right?
He said, no, it wouldn't be fair if I pick. So let's pick somebody who can be a bit more kind of objective. So he picks Paris. Paris was on the hillside,
and looking after his flock. Wasn't Paris also the son of Spartan, I think, or the Spartan...
he picks this he was a young shepherd, a gorgeous looking boy, and he says, look, you judge the contest, to which he does,
Athena, because she was going to offer him wisdom.
Strategy and wisdom. And then you had Juno, Hera, who was Zeus's wife also as well.
For power.
exactly. And then Venus says, look, if you pick me, I'll grant you any woman, you want. She just stripped naked in front
love.
Of him. He chose that, and yes. And obviously he, somewhat fell in love or fell for one of the king's wives, Helen of Troy.
If I might jump in, thank you so much for this, because Helen, intriguingly, and this could get beyond, but is also a twin with, Clemestra. Anyway, the point is that the Gemini twins, Castor and Pollux.
Okay.
There were two sets of twins that came from the mating of the queen of Sparta with Zeus. And one was mortal, one's immortal. Of course, we have the twins, Castor and Pollux.
Right.
But Helen is one of the sisters. She's a sister. She's the immortal. And here, Paris, at any rate, it's more choices. It gets down to choices.
Focus here. So Paris picks her.
The most beautiful woman in the world. The
most beautiful woman in the world. But yet she was married. She was already married to the king.
Yes, little detail.
She was married to the king of Sparta, of Argos, and Sparta. So she was married to that king, and that's what set the war off, because his brother, which was Agamemnon, now says, "Hey, are you going to let the, you know, you're going to let Troy, you know, come and take your woman like that?" And, you know, and you know, so that's what built up the whole war. And, you know, we hear about the Trojan horse and stuff and all that stuff. That's where all that. And it was a war that went on for 10 years.
Yes, it did. You know, what's fascinating is the repetition of horse. Also,
Menelaus, because that was her husband's name. I just remembered. Eleanor Troy was married to Menelaus. Menelaus, that was her husband.
And he was of, I forget, because there was Sparta and Troy. And of course, Sparta was part of Greece that was very warrior-oriented.
Islands. You had Argos, you had Sparta, you had Troy. So you had these different, you had Crete, you know, you had all the different islands, which are still pretty much there today, alive.
Yes.
Still bearing the same names. So you had all these different, so Helen was originally from Argos. And I think when she married Menelaus, then she became Helen of Sparta.
Oh, I see. Yes.
Then when she ran away with Paris, then she became Helen of Troy.
So interestingly, Venus's son Aeneas, he flees Troy after the war. Yeah. And I'm not quite sure how he's the ancestor of Ramos and Romulus, who were raised by the wolves, who are the twins. And there's a whole, we won't get into that mythology now, but are the founders of Rome.
Of Rome, yeah.
But, you know, it goes back to a lot of not just choices, but I'm thinking of trauma. Going back a little bit with Venus, she was actually born out of a traumatic experience, and it would take, I mean, being her, Uranus being castrated is a violent action, and pardon anybody if this triggers any conversation from any of this, but it is as far as the story goes, and it is really a matter of just looking at it more from the metaphor viewpoint, symbolically of establishing time, you know, rather putting an end to just endless creation, to saying, no, we have we have an order here going. So in other words, but it still shows me how love conquers all, that through anything, you know, we know this through the ages and it's so current today, but in mythology too, that
definitely.
It's the wombs of the water and the
the soothing, the healing, you know, she has soothing and healing aspects and properties to her.
And here too with the war, that through this terrible war that has been, I know Jason Hawley goes a lot into the Trojan War. He's an astrologer here in the United States.
Yeah.
But just as a fact that her son Aeneas flees, and I think he brings with him the Vestals, the Vestal Virgins. There's a whole many different ways of looking at the mythology picture. But as far as this, if he is the ancestor of Ramos and Romulus, in other words, again, Venus is saying that through her love of desire, that somehow she's giving, I guess, civilization another chance.
Definitely, because that's what she is. She is, Venus represents, she's an enhancer. She's an aspect of the psyche that allows us to be able to better, to enhance. This is why she governs over partnerships and relationships, because our ability to relate with one another and share with one another and to be able to advance and to enhance things, to better things, to make it be better, to look better, you know, is aspects of that Venus.
Thank you. Well, her name does, looking at this slide here, goes back to Venus, which is before Latin, I guess, V-E-N-A-S, to desire or love. But she was married to Vulcan, which we'll get into esoteric astrology in a moment, which I know you're quite involved with, who is the god of fire, or called Hesphasius, that's how you say it in the Greek way, and the god of fire. And he's an amazing god. He's not really talked about much.
Some people pronounce it Hephaestus.
Hephaestus, thank you. Okay, that's very much better. But he did many things. He created almost like an engineer through fire and welding. He did, I think, the Labyrinth for Menos. Yes. And he did the...
He also made the owl also as well. The owl
Athena?
For Athena. He created the owl for Athena. He also, he made one of the owls or one of the creations for, what's his name as well, that went to
go
and the one who went to go and kill the Medusa, who had to. His name will come to me. I've totally forgotten, but yeah, he made something for him also as well.
Wasn't Hercules? There's also that young man who
Perseus.
Thank you.
So he made also one of the old mechanical owls. He was sort of like the technology guy of his time. You know, he created all these wonderful things.
And interestingly, he is the one child that Zeus and Hera, or Juno. Jupiter is same as Zeus, folks, Hera and Juno. So they have one child, and it's Vulcan. And he was a lame god, and I think he got thrown out of the crib. He was rejected by Juno. So it's interesting that he finally is married to Venus. But the reason he got married to Venus was because he was upset with his mother, and he created this beautiful throne for Juno. Yes. And of course, she was enamored with it, and she sits down, but she can't get out of it. She's stuck. So, in other words, it's interesting that, you know, in that case, that we become so enraptured with something we have to have that we can't let go of it. He did he bartered with his mother after the next day or so or whenever and said, if you give me what I want, I'll let you out. And so she says, anything. And he says, I want to marry Venus. So of course she Zeus had to give her Venus. Venus didn't have much of a choice, which is also an interesting thing. I don't know if that gets into karma or what in life.
Yes.
But she, as an energy consciousness, thinking about
Yeah, exactly. And they had children as well, I believe.
It says here that they didn't have any children. That's the interesting part. But they stay married. So there's no point, of that. And he does create the carriage, it says, that I read about from doves. But here, going into a little bit of esoteric astrology, which for people, briefly, if you see the slide here, it's our soul level. It gives us spiritual information, whereas instead of modern or psychological, is more the personality. Yeah. But with that said, Vulcan rules in esoterically Taurus.
Taurus, that's right. That's correct.
Yeah,
that's correct. Which would make sense on many levels, because Vulcan Hephaestus was a blacksmith. He was a forger. He was he worked with fire and volcanoes. Vulcan is where we get the word volcano from. That comes from his name. So he was the god of that, and this is something very earthbound. It's a very earth, So again, we can kind of see the connection on many levels to the Taurus kind of nature, because Vulcan was very earthy, very hands on, very practical,
That's right. Created.
Creative, yeah, exactly.
Things.
Things, exactly.
Functional things.
Right,
yes.
Exactly, yes.
And thank you for that, too, about the earth and the volcano, because here, yes. What I was able to glean, Googling, learning about yes. this myself, is that Taurus teaches us to help oneself and right. and stand strong so right. that there is this ability, a survival, you know, like Taurus would be the sense of like, okay, I have my energy, but Taurus is spirit into form.
Exactly.
So that's interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now she did have children.
Yes, she did. Right? Yes. Yes.
And with Mars, the lover.
Yes.
And some of them were the, you know, both sides, like you said, there's duality. Yes. So if we are into battle where we're just all grit out war with somebody to fight for some cause, that she had two children, fear and terror.
And terror, Phobos and Terros.
Yeah, and but then she had peace, concordia, harmonia.
Yeah, exactly.
Also.
And
finally, the Cupids. Yeah. Go ahead.
And the Cupids also as well. So I think the children of you know, Aphrodite, Venus, they're alluring to the different aspects or manifestations also of her also as well.
Yes.
You know, because out of love can come fear, a fear of losing that love.
Oh, boy.
Out of love, we can get terror. Because
we have to change, maybe.
Exactly.
We don't, so we lose ourselves, we're merging.
Right. And there also, with the balance, we can get harmonia, you know.
Strengthen, let go of what we're weak about and strengthen with our, I love this.
Yes,
Israel, I'm so glad we're talking.
You know, yeah. The Cupids representing those different aspects of love, as you put it. So, these are all sub-levels or sub-extensions of who and what Venus is about. So Terros and Phobos makes perfect sense in a way.
It doesn't it? It's both sides.
Yeah.
Now, this flashes back to earlier in our conversation about Mesoamerica and the planet Venus, because this beautiful picture here, which I just love, and we only have a few minutes, I'm being reminded, so we'll tie together the best we can here. But they relate, as you said, the planet. It indicates Venus as a rising in the morning, which she will do after her conjunction in August with the sun, which is one of the Venus star points, which is a whole other conversation. Yeah. I'm giving a talk actually with OPA about the Venus star point, the United States Venus star point in Scorpio, which will be July 23rd, a little plug here. It would be exciting. But here, these two, Kukulkan and if I can say it right, Quetzalcoatl are identified with her because of this whole process. But we'll kind of go through that. And here people can see. But it's a plumed serpent. But interestingly here, just to say wind and air, isn't that exactly what we were talking about with psyche? Right.
And
all of it.
The spirit, yeah.
And again, showing about Venus with the of sea and horses. That's the other thought I was thinking. Poseidon is with horses.
Horses, and that's right.
Then the Troy, you know.
With the Trojan horse. Yeah. We see many of these animals and symbolical figures constantly popping up through the various mythologies.
Yes. And here I just bringing up that Venus happens to be the esoteric ruler of Gemini, which is communication. So it kind of comes full circle that because it is to teach that you don't just learn the facts, you have to have compassion with it, you know. Yeah. And then once again, so we're kind of lodge on something here to tie it together, but Hermes, Mercury's child is Hermaphroditus. Which is both the androgyny of thought.
Yeah.
So, and again, she had lovers with mortals.
Oh, yeah, definitely. She was actually the only goddess who made it with mortals. So,
Because we do.
Exactly. All levels. Oh, yeah. I think that shows us her connection, a spiritual connection, as much as her physical connection as well.
That's very true, because she is here. We can get rid of these, Nathan, for the last moment, because it is true. When you think about it, the father originally was the sky god Uranus
mating with
Earth. So it's like, and right now Uranus is in Taurus.
Yes,
we have more conversations ahead.
Yeah. So she represents like a bridge between the spiritual world and the physical manifestation, the physical world as well. She is the bridge that ties them together.
Thank you, Israel Ahosi. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We will return. We can't help it. This is too fantastic. Have a great day, and we'll see you again. Subscribe. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Talk Cosmos, the show where Sue Rose Minahan and her panel of guests connect soul growth patterns with the energetic cycles of astrology. Be sure to tune in next Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time to continue your journey through the roots of the cosmic pathway.